This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of March 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 12th of March, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Reading today is John Richards.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: University Chiefs Divided on Solar Farm. Fire destroys three homes despite 116 strong effort. And restaurateur's dream come true with Abbey Mill Venture. So, John, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Yes, the headline is University Chiefs Divided on Solar Farm. TV presenter Alan Titchmarsh has joined the tide of opposition to a solar farm north of Alsford. Objections and latterly expressions of support have been pouring into the City Council office over plans for land off Godsfield Lane, Armsworth. There have been around 685 objections and 175 supports. Mr. Titchmarsh is Chancellor of the Winchester University, a senior honorary position. And among the supporters of the scheme, according to the council, is Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the University. Mr. Titchmarsh of Holybourne, near Alton, wrote to the council, "A totally inappropriate site for this scale of solar power installation. Brownfield sites can be easily developed without affecting public amenities and areas of natural beauty that are valuable for both wildlife and human health and well-being. We do need to harness natural resources, but not when the creation of installations irreparably damages the countryside. Such actions are irresponsible and short-sighted." Professor Joy Carter of Park Lane, Abbotsworthy, said, "The world needs initiatives like this urgently. All life and the planet are threatened. Please go ahead." The university has built a reputation as a green institution, and Professor Carter took part in an Extinction Rebellion protest outside Barclays Bank on Jury Street in 2020. The Chronicle sought comment from the university, but none was forthcoming. Environment activists, Winchester Action on Climate Change, have called for people to support the scheme as a major way to tackle the climate crisis. Among the objectors are the British Horse Society, Byton Parish Council, which has joined the Alsford Society in objecting. Developer Anesco will not hold a public consultation, but has placed a new document on the City Council planning website. The South Downs National Park has raised concerns about the longer distance views. The proposed site is not within the national park. Candover's Parish Council said it's concerned about the proposed development of, quote, "a pristine area of the countryside, especially as it sits next to a long-distance footpath enjoyed by many in our parish, but also from far afield." CPC, that's Candover's Parish Council, is also concerned that permission for such a solar park risks setting a precedent for many other speculative applications in the countryside. "Whilst we appreciate the importance of renewable energy and that the availability of sites is constrained by their need to be near the grid, we would like councils to encourage and only give permission to more suitable sites first, such as those on brownfield sites or areas where the landscape is already degraded, such as next to large roads. Archaeologists are interested in the site. Tracy Matthews, Historic Environment Archaeology Officer at Winchester City Council, said, "To the east of the site, there's a series of intriguing crop mark features. Although their origins, date and significance is uncertain, the features illustrate the high archaeological potential of this area. A comment from Dr. Peter Lipiet of Cox's Hill, Twyford, is typical of the people writing in support. He says, "We have enormous need of solar energy as we confront the climate crisis. This is a carefully thought-through plan with minimum local impact that could be a significant pioneer locally for the many farms that will need to grow electricity on their land." Winack added, "Winchester District must therefore do more to generate its own clean energy needs, especially where this outcome can be funded entirely by private finance. If the concept of an emergency approved by Parliament is to have any meaning, then we should seize this opportunity."
Fire destroys three homes despite 116 strong effort. Residents whose homes were caught at the heart of a blaze at the weekend have praised the emergency services who battled the flames. A terrace of four thatched cottages at the barracks in Bransbury near Andover caught alight on March the 7th. At the peak of the incident, 116 firefighters were present. Three of the cottages were completely destroyed, but one was saved after hours of work by the emergency services. Abby Bettelschaffer, a resident of the saved cottage, said that the fire service had been incredible. She said, "They've been phenomenal. Everyone's safe and they managed to get as much sentimental stuff as they could out of the building." Firefighters were called at 4:17 p.m. on Sunday after fire alarms went off in all the cottages. For Abby, who's lived in the terrace for 7 years with her husband Mark, this in itself was not an unusual occurrence. She said, "Oh, the fire alarms go off every time you burn toast. You end up getting a lot of practice." However, this time it became apparent it was more serious. Abby said the alarms first went off in the second cottage before the rest of the buildings were set off, leading to the whole building evacuating. She said, "I was quite impressed with our reaction. We got kids, dogs and important documents all out before the fire crews arrived." Fire crews arrived within 12 minutes of the call and began tackling the blaze. The road was closed as 116 firefighters and 19 fire engines battled the flames into the night. While the teams fought to save the building, they were also able to salvage belongings from in the building. And no injuries were reported. Abby said they managed to get as much sentimental stuff as they could out of the building. They got loads of stuff out. Recovery work was still going on the following morning as Kylie Miles and her family gathered as much as they could from the remains of their cottage. They'd only moved in just before lockdown started. Kylie's stepsister, Gemma, said that it looked like the couple had lost everything and set up a fundraiser to help them. In particular, their six-year-old daughter, having had many of her belongings destroyed. Kylie's mum said that at 2 a.m, her granddaughter had been crying for her tablet and a blanket, but amongst the wreckage of the home, the tablet was pulled, working, from the rubble on Monday afternoon, and the blanket is also thought to have survived but is yet inaccessible. Kylie and her mother said, "We want to say a big thank you to the fire crews. They did more than they needed to." They said they're paid for it, but nothing says thank you like the human element of giving back to them. This human element is also very much present in Bransbury, where neighbours have banded together to provide support to those affected by the fire. Firefighters officially stopped their operation at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, nearly 48 hours since it started. Whilst their cottage is the least damaged of the terrace, the Bettelschaffers are not allowed to stay in their property while the rest of the building is unsafe. They plan on staying in the area for a couple of days before looking for somewhere to go while the property is rebuilt, which is expected to take at least a year. However, they hope to return as soon as they can. Abby said, "There's a plaque on the front of the terrace saying, 'Restored 1900. I think there'll be another one now. And there's several pictures of the fire raging and just a little bit of light smoke to start with, and later on flames shooting from the roof of the thatch. And the fire service photographs come from Newbury, Rushmore and Odiham fire stations, as well as obviously the local one. So they came from far and wide.
restaurateur's dream comes true with Abbey Mill Venture. A couple's decade-long ambition to take over one of Winchester's most historic buildings will come to fruition this week. City residents Mark and Eleanor Dodd will welcome customers for the first time to their new venture, In the Park, in Abbey Mill. The owners of the Cheswell Rectory have transformed the building in Abbey Gardens after celebrity chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall closed his River Cottage kitchen last year, which previously inhabited the space. Speaking to the Chronicle, Eleanor said, "It's a bit of a dream come true for us. My husband Mark viewed it 10 years ago and loved it, but it was a huge project. When River Cottage closed, we were then able to reconnect with this amazing building." Since taking on the building, the couple and their team have been working to overhaul every inch of the restaurant. "We have just given it a complete transformation. It really was a pared-back concept at River Cottage, and we have spent a lot of time and energy just trying to soften it up." The makeover has accentuated the building's ambiance, giving the historic site a fresh design and brand new concept. "I really want Abbey Mill to come back as that anchor in the park that people used to go to. It just feels that for many years it's become slightly forgotten," Eleanor said. "We want to bring a bit of fun and give back into Abbey Garden so that this building becomes part of the community again." Mark added, "We've been working behind the scenes for months on this project and we're now ready to open in spring. It's so exciting to be the new custodians of this incredibly historic site. We've seen our kids grow up here on this park and have spent many a summer picnicking in these lovely gardens. It's our intention to bring a bit of joy into the park and get Abbey Mill back to the heart of the community. We want to have fun and breathe new life into this famous spot, offering a thriving creative hub for food, drink, art and events in the park." On the ground floor of Abbey Mill, a family-friendly grill restaurant offering rotisserie dishes, waffles and casual all-day dining has been created, which will be transformed in the evening into a grill, serving meat, fish and local produce. Guests may be kept occupied in the adjoining mini arcade, complete with video games, Hampshire larder, merchandise and decks. Upstairs, in a new stylish new cafe and bar, which in the evening transforms into a low-lit bar serving key keg wines, cocktails and craft ales. Along with the upstairs bar, there will be a wine room featuring a selection of wines with a lounge space and a retail bottle shop. On warmer days, the outdoor terrace will offer all-day dining overlooking the park, alongside an artisan coffee cart will provide takeaways all year round. The second phase of the project we'll see an array of local collaborations and exhibitions with students, artists and designers. In the final phase, the top room will be developed into a training academy for apprentices and students of hospitality. And there are a number of photographs accompanying this article. I must say it really looks pretty nifty. There's a lovely photograph of Mark and Eleanor in the wine room, which certainly appeals to me. There's a lovely photograph of a complete makeover with the stairs and carpets, and it does look absolutely terrific. And there's a photograph of the upstairs, which will host a wine bar and cafe.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Blythe, Peter James Blythe, who died on the 24th of February, aged 84. Haste, Colin George Haste, died peacefully on the 8th of March, aged 90. Hope, David Hope, died peacefully at home on the 1st of March, aged 85. And Lua, Patricia Hilda Florence, known as Pat Lua, of Twyford died on the 28th of February, and she was a regular listener to this talking newspaper and may be known to some of you through the Colebrook Club. Schofield, Margot Schofield, died peacefully on the 25th of February, aged 76. Simpson, Kenneth George Simpson, died at home, aged 85. Tuttiette, Margaret Joan Tuttiette, née Matthews, died peacefully on the 17th of February, aged 81. And Wicks, Anthony Aaron Ballard Wicks, known as Tony, died at home in Chippenham, aged 75. John, we've got a Christian comment, I think, please.
We have. It's written by this week by Rosemary A. Baker, and it's entitled, Why Do We Pray? We are now in the third week of Lent. This is the season of the church year when Christians are encouraged to develop their spiritual disciplines, to study scripture, and to pray in preparation for Easter. Last Friday afternoon, I was invited to participate in a service to mark the World Day of Prayer, which was zooming out of the village of King Somborne, where I had been the minister. It was both a privilege and a pleasure to take part in this service, put together by the Christian Women of Vanuatu, a cluster of islands in the Southwest Pacific. I was able to make contact not only with old and new friends in King Somborne, but also with many former inhabitants who we were able to be in contact with through Zoom. I have been amazed to discover, not sure if it's because of lockdown, the vast array of materials that are available online to facilitate study and prayer during Lent. One of these is the website on BBC Radio 4, connecting all their religious programmes to Pathways to Prayer, an online retreat provided by the Jesuit order exploring Ignatian spirituality. This is one of the many tools available to assist us with our prayer life. Why do we pray? Maybe we want to spend time with God, or we're feeling stressed, or we want to get to know ourselves more deeply. We may turn to set prayers, our imagination, scripture, simply sitting in silence, or any of the other myriad ways of praying to express this intention of being in touch with the God who we believe loves us and draws us to him. It might be said that an unfortunate soul in a precarious situation doesn't have a prayer. But did you know, I didn't, that the words precarious and prayer are closely related in terms of their origins? Their common ancestor is the word prek, P-R-E-K, which meant to ask or request. This became the Latin word precari, to beg, entreat, or ask earnestly. It then made its way into English as pray. It then came to apply to praying to God or a saint. The word precarious developed almost in parallel as a legal term meaning held through the favour of another. This was a potentially risky business, and so we have the meaning most of us understand today. Prayer has been used for 5,000 years, so it would seem to be of some importance. Many people might think that depending on prayer might be a precarious thing to depend on, especially in these difficult times, but there are, and have been, many Christians that would attest otherwise.
Thank you, John. Now we move on to letters to the editor. The first one is headed Garden Waste, excuse me, and is submitted by Richard Vellacott in Mitrodever. Sir, I wonder who came up with the idea of replacing the green garden waste bags with plastic bins and making a charge for the plastic bins. It was certainly not a gardener. Even if one acknowledges that the council finances have been hit by the pandemic, surely waste collection should be part of the council tax rather than an additional annual charge. Furthermore, with reserves of £21 million and assets in excess of £66 million, is this additional charge really justifiable? The council cannot realistically claim to be broke, Surely reserves are there to be used in the event of a crisis. Putting the finances of this scheme to one side, the practicalities have not been considered. When full, these wheelie bins can be very heavy and are not designed to be popped in a car and taken to the dump if there's an excess of garden waste. It's also not really practical to wheel them around a garden. Many householders have found ways to accommodate two wheelie bins, but for many, three is a step too far. The green bag collection system worked well for gardeners. They could easily be moved around a garden and filled with rubbish. They were flexible as opposed to rigid and therefore more conducive to accepting the irregularities of garden waste. The claim that they are untidy is not valid. There may be moments immediately after collection when there's a degree of untidiness, but householders are generally quick to pick up the empty bags before they're blown away or misappropriated by others. The waste collection service really needs to be reviewed. I'm sure that the majority of gardeners would agree that the green bags are by far and away the most practical way of collecting garden waste. It's a service provided by the council for the benefit of the householders. It should not be used as a means to raise finance, particularly when it's not necessary to do so. In addition, should the council really be promoting even more plastic? And that letter was from Richard Vellicott, Mitchell Dever.
This next letter is from Dominic Hubble in Alsford, and it's entitled White Elephant. Sir, how nice it is to travel along the A31 at the national speed limit again after the unnecessary 30 miles an hour tailgating of the last 7 weeks. I'm sure the Hampshire Local Resilience Forum is pleased to release us from our shackles quite so quickly, but now we are left with 200-metre-long concrete eyesores and much traffic management detritus. Although the Forum avoided paying most of the £2.5 million set-up costs and additional operational cost of £500,000 approximately, having supported financially by the Department of Transport, they were responsible for suggesting this traffic flow system that proved to be totally superfluous to requirements. Perhaps someone should have counted how many lorry-carrying ferries run from Portsmouth per day. The lorry triage near Portsmouth would have been more than sufficient. However, as a national tax-paying citizen rather than just a Hampshire rate payer, I have still ended up out of pocket paying for a white elephant. In business, you are rewarded for making the correct decisions, not the cautious ones. And that's from Dominic Hubble, Ladywell Lane, Alsford.
And from the joy of having the A31 back to the misery, tackle the noise, says Charles Blackmore, Church Lane, Exton. So one of the joys of lockdown is being able to be outside in the beauty of the Meon Valley and the South Downs National Park without excessive noise from motorcycles racing on the roads. The noise pollution is worse on Wednesday evenings and weekends, especially on the A32, when gatherings of up to 100 bikers are not uncommon at Lumi's Cafe near the Meon Hut crossroads with the A272. Residents up and down the Meon Valley have protested to the authorities for years as the problem has got worse. To no avail. Hampshire police seem powerless or unwilling to do what they should be doing, stopping motorbikers and fining the ones whose illegal exhausts and antisocial behaviour has become the scourge of the countryside. The wording Winchester City Council is on every road and lane sign in this area. If Winchester City Council is so keen to advertise their jurisdiction, then why can they not take responsibility too for this problem? And that's from Charles Blackmore, Church Lane, Exton.
And Michael Curtis from Alsford is writing about Boomtown 2021. Sir, to date, so far, there has been precious little publicity connected to Boomtown's planning application for a permanent licence for their show. I get the impression that a good many people do not know that this event is approaching again, and this time they want a permanent planning permission to hold this event year after year. I personally do not see any evidence that this will be just for one show a year, Goodness knows what else will be sprung on us under this umbrella to ruin our summer. The main reasons against this show are the same as before. It causes too much noise, traffic, rubbish, lights. There are too many people attending, which causes problems all around the Winchester area. It goes without saying that a handful of policies sacred to the South Downs National Park, preserving the countryside and their very strict no light night lights policy, get ignored. There are some quite large holes in the environmental impact statement in the planning application. May I suggest that all those who are disturbed by Boomtown should write in with their objections to this new planning application, and then it mentions SDNP/21/00290/FUL. These should be sent in as soon as possible, as there is some confusion about the closing date, end of March or maybe extended to May. And that's from Michael Curtis, Kilmerston, Alsford.
And this letter from Angela Saunders says, seat shortage. Sir, I could not agree more with Justin Kay, Chronicle Letters, March the 4th. I felt disbelief, anger and a certain sadness that those seats in the inner close could be removed. As a far from young regular walker around our beautiful city, I actually needed to sit there sometimes. Now, there's a definite shortage of seats around the very beautiful cathedral. I cannot help but wonder if this is yet another example of the public being treated like naughty children during this seemingly endless curtailment of our liberties. And that's from Angela Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
The headline of this letter from Danny Hable in Winchester is Wintonian. Sir, your article about the statue to Licoricia of Winchester, Chronicle, March the 4th, illustrates why I am proud to be a Wintonian. The Jewish history of medieval Winchester received extraordinarily little attention until the posthumous publication in 2009 of Sue Bartlett's book Licoricia of Winchester. The fascinating medieval Jewish trail launched by the Winchester Tourist Office in 2015 increased awareness and has attracted many visitors. Support from the city and from Hampshire County Council has encouraged the development of an education programme directed at children, which will be introduced using the new statue as a focal point. We must learn from our past appalling treatment of minorities and benefit from the different skills, cultures and diversity that can come from outside our closer society. Examining Licoricia and the Jewish community of Winchester prior to the expulsion of Jews from England in 1290 gives us an unconventional perspective of individuals and a small community forcibly separated yet interacting with the majority. The statue outside the Discovery Centre will act as a catalyst for us to learn about tolerance and valuing the other, much needed and conflicted Britain that is currently experiencing a significant increase in acts of hostility against Jews, Muslims and people of colour. That letter is from Danny Hable, Beer Close, Week, Winchester.
This letter from Steve Harborne, Hyde Street Blues. So in their letter to the Chronicle last week, John Andrews and Hilary Thomas cast doubt on petitions hosted through online platforms such as ours on 38 Degrees. Whilst it's correct to note that such petitions can be signed by anyone, anywhere, it's incorrect to assume this is necessarily the case. Social distancing and other COVID measures meant that it was not possible to gather support by any means, but for the record, at the time of writing, over 1,530 people have signed our petition. Unsurprisingly, as this is an important local issue, more than 99.9% of this support has come from people living in Winchester itself or the surrounding villages. Only half a dozen or so are from those outside the immediate locality. As many have previously said in this paper and elsewhere, it's not just Worthy Lane that's been adversely affected by the closure. The vehicles, now no longer using Hyde Street, are now following council diversion signs into Worthy Lane, Andover Road and City Road in each direction, leading to increased congestion, including that through the notoriously busy Carfax Junction. It is in all our interests to cut the volume of traffic on our roads, but to simply shift the traffic from one key B road onto others is not the way to achieve this. And that letter is from Steve Harborne, Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
Next is a letter from Gillian Russell, who is the End Polio Now coordinator for Winchester Rotary. And the letter is entitled Floral Campaign to End Polio. Sir, over the last few days, it has become very clear that the display of purple crocuses planted around the feet of the King Alfred statue last October by members of Winchester Rotary has been noticed. Indeed, my post in Winchester Picks on Facebook recently about the crocuses has received over 250 likes in under 3 days. We are delighted to have been given this opportunity to mark the global campaign End Polio Now in this way, and are very grateful to the city councillors and officers who have made it possible. In Great Britain and Ireland, the purple crocus is the symbol of the campaign, in which Rotary International is a key player, and similar displays can be seen in towns and cities around the country. Purple is the colour used to mark the little fingers of children after they receive the oral vaccine. I am one of two polio survivors in Winchester Rotary, and while many regard polio as a thing of the past and the epidemics of the early 1950s are a distant memory for most, it is a reminder of the continued importance of effective vaccines. Several of our members are donating the cost of their COVID-19 vaccinations to the End Polio Now Fund. The disease is still endemic in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and a case anywhere is a threat everywhere. And you can, he says, or she says that you can, if you like more information, you can contact by email. I'll just tell you what that is. It's media@winchester-rotary.org. And her name is Gillian Russell. She's the End Polio Now coordinator from Winchester Rotary, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we have the Chronicle editorial comment. Different ways to tackle climate crisis. Our front page story on the huge reaction to the plans for a solar farm north of Alresford is further brought into focus because of the different views taken by the two most senior figures at Winchester University. TV Gardener, presenter and author Alan Titchmarsh, the University Chancellor, is strongly opposed on environmental grounds. The University's Vice-Chancellor, Professor Joy Carter, is strongly in favour on environmental grounds. And there's the rub. The world is facing a potentially irreversible climate crisis, excuse me, and every nation must put its weight behind the effort, particularly China, India and the USA. Many environmentalists say the UK has to play its part and solar power is a crucial part of the ways we will tackle the issue. Others say those efforts should not come at the expense of trashing the countryside, particularly one as unspoiled as the Candover Valley. It really is a difficult issue, but one that requires a more sophisticated and coordinated approach than piling an almost countless number of panels into the easy option of open farmland.
And now we have an article by George Hayter, which is, you'll find this interesting, I think. It's entitled, Lucky I Didn't Break My Neck. Hundreds of times I had performed a routine task safely, but last week I was doing the same thing and ended up in hospital. The daily chore performed at dusk involved pulling a cord to lower a roller blind over a skylight above the stairs. If I stood a few steps from the top, I would reach only a few inches of the looped cord, so it would take about 7 yanks to unroll the blind. However, by standing on the top step, I found that I could reach higher up the loop, so that only 3 yanks were required. It's human nature to want to shorten the duration of tasks, so over the years, I had adopted the quicker top step method. Unfortunately, that method involved planting both feet on the edge of the top step and facing down the stairs with my right hand out in front of me, deliberately toppling forward until I was halted by my outstretched hand coming up against the windowsill under the skylight. With my feet on the top step and my right hand on the windowsill, I was arched over the staircase and able to use my free left hand to yank the loop. If I looked straight down, the dizzying view was of stairs far below. Last Friday evening, I must have performed this contortion carelessly, because my hand slipped from the windowsill. With my arm no longer propping me up, my upper body began to accelerate downward. My feet were probably still on the top step, but the rest of me was relentlessly pivoting down, and the part that was accelerating fastest was the top of me, my head. If this trajectory continued, my head would soon be below my feet, and still gathering speed was on course to hit one of the steps about halfway down the stairs. Very frightened, I closed my eyes. I don't know what involuntary gymnastics my body performed next, but I do remember a series of loud sound effects along the lines of biff bam biddy biddy boom 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 thump dump. After the painful pummeling, I came to rest and opened my eyes. My wife had heard me shout, and she arrived from the lounge about 3 seconds later. I was lying face up on the hall floor, my right ear up against the bottom step. Instead of slamming into a wall and a window at the end of the first flight of our stairs, my helpless body somehow travelled round a right-angled turn at a half-landing 2/3 of the way down. My wife phoned the 111 NHS Emergency Advice Service, and they decided to summon an ambulance, which arrived in about 10 minutes. Its 2-man crew examined me and stuck probes all over my thorax before taking me to the big Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Rumsey Road in Winchester, where I was stretchered into A&E. In a cubicle there, I was attached to a monitor and efficiently questioned and tested by a nurse and then by a doctor. I was very grateful that they were checking me thoroughly. I had bruises, grazes, and a little temporary memory loss, but everyone said I was lucky to have avoided serious injury or worse. The final check was a CT scan of my brain, and I was discharged shortly after midnight. To enable me to adjust the blind without being tempted to suspend myself over the potentially lethal drop, I have now ordered a new longer cord loop. Of course, I should have done that years ago. I'm now reviewing every aspect of my lifestyle, from driving habits to cable trip hazards, in a bid to eliminate the risk of needlessly imposing myself on the NHS again. I urge everybody to take a few minutes to do the same. Is there anything risky that you do so often that you have become blind to the danger?
And after that, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Finishing touch to the viaduct. The last piece of a vast restoration project has been completed. Hockley Viaduct, the Victorian structure that carried a railway across the Itchen Valley south of Winchester, has been restored in recent years. It includes a signal, and pieces of coloured glass have now been inserted into the arm. The pieces of red and green glass complete the signal, which is positioned as clear to proceed. Julia Sanderson, chairman of Friends of Hockley Viaduct, told Belgarum, "We've finally been able to carry out the last little thing that needed doing to the Hockley Viaduct i.e. to insert the coloured spectacles into the signal arm. We had them for some time, but what with one thing and another, have had to wait until Sustrans could carry out their work on the viaduct, cutting back some of the overhanging trees. At last they're in place, and the viaduct looks spectacular. Julia explained, the two lights are one red and one green, and with these particular spectacles, the green one is actually quite bluish. This is because the signal was lit with an oil lamp, so the yellow flame would have turned the blue to green. The viaduct was built in the 1890s and is primarily made of concrete. It carried the railway which ran from Newbury to Southampton and closed in the 1960s. Plans in the 1980s to blow it up by the army were dropped after a public outcry because of the impact on the valley and the expense of removing the debris afterwards. Eventually, the owners, the city council, decided it would be cheaper to repair and maintain it than any other option. And there's a couple of photos, a lovely photograph of the viaduct taken from quite high up above it, so an aerial view of that, I think probably with a drone. One of the completed signal with its coloured pieces of glass in place, and resplendent it looks too. So now this week's announcements. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 12th of March at 6:27 a.m. and begins at 6:04 p.m. And next Wednesday the 17th of March, it's at 6:16 a.m. and begins at 6:14 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is shown on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with items of general news.
Brewery turns to customers for survival scheme. It started out as a small business venture between friends back in 1997. But now Itchen Valley Brewery, which is known across Hampshire and beyond, is in need of help. The Alsford-based company is turning to its customers to help raise around £50,000. In a statement, the Itchen Valley Brewery detailed its survival plan, quote, "The impact of COVID-19 has devastated our industry. Government help has been very limited, as the majority of support offered to the hospitality sector has not included brewers. We have been fighting against the tide for almost a year, and we are now reaching out to our loyal customers and all beer enthusiasts to help us fight back. There is a plan. Our focus is currently on direct sales to you, with a core range of 8 superb beers plus seasonal offerings. How you can help is by becoming an IVB member today. We have created an IVB membership scheme," and obviously IVB is Itchen Valley Brewery, "and want to ask everyone to become members. Depending on the level you join at, you'll receive some ridiculously amazing rewards. Up to 10% off all tap room orders, a cool member t-shirt, and a unique member IVB pint glass. Through this buy forward option, we hope to raise a minimum of £50,000 to bring to fruition the plan above, plus move forward on other exciting projects like our tap room renovation. All members will also be invited to a party when restrictions ease. Over the last 20 years, Itchen Valley Brewery has poured more than 30 million pints. Products have won awards, both nationally and internationally. The statement adds, we hope that in a few months, COVID-19 restrictions will start to ease, and with your generous support, we will get to the other side. We cannot wait to throw open our doors.
This item is headed Benches to Return After Backlash from Public, and you'll recall one of the letters related to this. Public seating is to return to the Inner Close in Winchester. The seats had been removed by Winchester Cathedral because people were breaking the social distancing rules by gathering there. But it was criticised as harming older people who need to use the seating for rest. In a letter to the Chronicle, Justin Kay highlighted the inconvenience of the measure for older people in the city, of whom there are many, and the sheer stupidity of this ill-judged move. Now the cathedral has announced the seats will return next week with new advice from public health agencies. A spokeswoman said, "We now have a date for when the seating will return, which is March the 8th. This is following the latest public health guidance from the government, which states that people are permitted to have socially distanced one-on-one meetings outdoors in a public space for recreation, which can include a coffee on a bench."
High Street set to reopen. Last month, the government announced its roadmap for the easing of national restrictions. Shops and businesses in and around our High Street are now preparing to reopen. And if all goes to plan, welcome back local residents from April the 12th. Several of our local shops have pivoted their businesses during lockdown, moving online or trading via social media platforms. Others made deliveries or operated click and collect services. All these efforts were to keep fulfilling their customers' needs and also keep their tills ringing. But none of this could really replace the satisfaction of serving customers in person. We know that not all businesses were able to adapt. It's been an extremely tough time for many. So to help, we've recently launched a free programme of support, available currently to the end of June, for High Street businesses across the district who have suffered from the impact of COVID-19 as part of the government and ERDF's Reopening High Streets Safely Fund. During lockdown, many local businesses also went the extra mile to support their communities. Now it's our turn to support them as they reopen. It's time to rediscover what Winchester District has to offer. You'll find everything from beautifully curated independent fashion boutiques and giftware to delicious local food and drink. And by continuing to shop local, you'll not only be supporting businesses, you'll also avoid non-essential travel. The return of in-person shopping sadly does not signal the end of the pandemic. We must continue to follow the government guidelines to keep us all safe and avoid another lockdown. So to help support consumer confidence, Winchester City Council has been working with the Health and Safety Executive, and together we have been conducting a series of visits to ensure the safety of customers and staff. As places reopen, please remember the hands, face, space mantra. This will help protect you, your families, and our community. Our high streets have plenty of signage to remind us to socially distance and avoid overcrowding areas. The rule of six, or two households from March the 29th, means we can enjoy some takeaway al fresco dining, and from April the 12th, you will be able to eat outdoors at cafes, pubs and restaurants. However, it won't be possible to eat in until May the 17th at the earliest. Do remember, if you're grabbing a picnic and heading to one of Winchester's beauty spots, to keep them that way. Please respect, protect and enjoy, and leave places as you would like to find them. Despite the pandemic, businesses continue to invest and seek new opportunities in the Winchester district. There are some exciting new launches on the horizon. One of these is the new venture from Mark and Eleanor Dodd from the Chesil Rectory, one of the most historic independent restaurants in Winchester. In the Park will be a multi-layered space incorporating an open grill restaurant, stylish bar, all-day cafe and a decadent wine room. Even space and bottle shop in the beautiful Abbey Mill. With each milestone of the lockdown easing, we will get a closer look at this exciting project. Starting next week with a coffee cart, followed by their bottle shop and then picnics in the park from March the 29th and the opening of their garden terrace on April the 12th for all day dining. Mark says, "It's so exciting to be the new custodians of this incredibly historic site. We've seen our kids grow up here on this park and have spent many a summer picnicking in these lovely gardens. It's our intention to bring a bit of joy into the park and get Abbey Mill back to the heart of the community."
There, the show will go on after last year's cancellation. the longest-running festival of outdoor arts, which attracts nearly 100,000 people to Winchester each year, will go ahead this year, but in a different form. Organisers of the Hat Fair, which features international street performers, dance, circus, music and local community performances, and has been running since 1974, will go ahead as planned between July the 2nd and the 4th. Play to the Crowd, the arts and education charity that runs Hat Fair and Theatre Royal Winchester, cancelled the event last year due to COVID. Derek Newland, chief executive of Play to the Crowd, said, "Following the Prime Minister's announcement of the roadmap out of lockdown and the notion that outdoor events can return with controlled numbers by the 17th of May, and many more COVID restrictions could be lifted by the 21st of June, we feel confident that we will be able to stage a fabulous and safe outdoor festival at the beginning of July." Andrew Loretto, Hat Fair and Playmakers Director, added, "Despite the very welcome news, this year's festival will take a different format to previous years. All 3 days of this year's event will take place at North Walls Recreation Ground. It will be socially distanced and ticketed. There are a number of reasons for doing this, but fundamentally it allows us to manage the audience numbers and adapt should any further COVID restrictions be brought in or the date of full restrictions be lifted is pushed back. By limiting the numbers able to attend and keeping socially distanced measures in place, we also hope this will give our audiences the confidence to return to a live event of this nature and will create a COVID-secure environment for our staff, volunteers and artists. We are determined to stage an outdoor festival for Winchester this summer and need to be in a position where we can react to any situation. We can't think of a better way of celebrating and bringing friends and family together again. We need festivals like Hat Fair more than ever this year, and I'm so thrilled that we are able to continue."
Flag flies high for students. Winchester College has adapted a tradition to mark the return of pupils. The Warden's flag was raised over the school to mark a special moment in the school's history. The Warden of Winchester College, Chair of the School's Governors, has his own ceremonial flag, which is usually only raised when he is in residence. Yesterday morning, the flag was raised by school porter Tony Edwards to signify a welcome return to school for pupils and staff and in tribute to all that the school community has achieved over the past 50 weeks during the pandemic. The flag can be seen above the Porter's Lodge on College Street in Winchester. A college spokeswoman said, "To see the Warden's flag fly over Winchester this week is a symbol of joy at the return of our staff and boys to the school and a sign of hope that better times are on their way."
One vote ends checkmate over home garage plans. Councillors were split over a plan for a new garage at a house in Sparsholt. Amanda and John McKenna applied for changes at The Lodge in Home Lane. Plans for a modern-style single-storey extension were not contentious, but the committee was split over a new garage, which attracted 8 objections. The parish council said it would have an unacceptable impact on the neighbouring property, Mayfield House. Local ward councillor Carolyn Horrell said there was significant concern about the garage locally and questioned how it fitted into the council's green agenda to allow the demolition of perfectly good existing garage. A Mr. Tovey objecting gave a visual presentation of the impact of the new garage. Councillor Ruffle was concerned about the use of the house. "Why have an office inside the front door? Is it going to be a business? It looks suspicious to me," he said. Committee Chairman Therese Evans answered, "It's not for us to tell people how to use their house. If they want the front door opening onto their study, that's their choice. And how they use the upstairs of their garage, that's their choice." Councillor Evans said if the neighbours thought there were breaches of planning rules, they could report it to the enforcement team at the council. The committee was divided, 4 votes each, and Councillor Evans used her casting vote to approve the plan.
Step forward for Silver Hill. plans to transform Winchester city centre's Silver Hill site and create a vibrant mixed-use development, including new homes and a thriving nighttime economy, have taken a step forward. Winchester City Council's Cabinet discussed the next step for the site, now known as Central Winchester Regeneration, at its meeting yesterday as the Chronicle went to press. Members were discussing the project following the completion of an online public consultation, which saw over 2,500 people visit an exhibition into the scheme and over 100 people attend an online consultation session. More than 300 members of the public also completed a questionnaire. Of those who answered the questionnaire, 68% confirmed that they supported the project's proposals, and the majority supported key elements of the vision, including affordable housing, flexible workspaces, opening up the waterways and improved public realm. There were more mixed views on plans for managing movement around the site, particularly around parking and buses. Some concerns were also expressed about the proposed delivery route using a single development partner. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "This is such an important site for the future of the city, for our economic prosperity and for future generations who may want to make Winchester their home. It's an exciting opportunity and we must get it right." We are very encouraged by the feedback from the public during what was a very comprehensive public consultation and can now concentrate on the elements of the proposals that we would like to give more thought to, as well as those where we are able to press ahead. We are determined to see this underutilised, wasted space in the very heart of our beautiful city come to life, and look forward to making the aspirations set out in the Central Winchester Supplementary Planning Document a reality, at the best time, in the right way, for the benefit of all. The project will be completed in stages, and the council will now consider how to encourage longer visits to the city centre, alongside improvements to the ground floor of King's Walk and the surrounding public realm, and creating a temporary open space on the site of the old Friarsgate Medical Centre. Planners are also discussing the best way to develop a creative hub at King's Walk and how to coordinate buses on street to unlock the Silver Hill site. More work is also being done on the best way to deliver the development proposals for the long term across the wider site, and a preferred way forward will be presented at a cabinet meeting in the summer for approval to progress.
Society disagrees over cancellation. A historical society has expressed disappointment at the cancellation of events to mark the 200th anniversary of the publication of Rural Rides by William Cobbett. The Cobbett Society acknowledges the nature of his anti-Semitism, but says it should not override his many positive aspects. Last week, the Chronicle reported Edward Fennell as saying the events had been dropped after the extent and virulence of Cobbett's hatred of Jews became clear. Cobbett's Rural Rides is considered a classic of political journalism, chronicling his journeys across southern England in the early 19th century, at a time of great economic and political upheaval. Stuart Edge, treasurer of the Cobbett Society, said, "We had been involved, along with others, in the project to celebrate Rural Rides, and were very disappointed that it was abandoned. We did recognise that recent highlighting of the issues of slavery and anti-Semitism might lead to challenges during the project. To be honest about Cobbett, we have to acknowledge these unacceptable prejudiced pieces and to condemn him for such attitudes. However, we would strenuously resist any attempts for such unacceptable views to be used as a reason not to celebrate Cobbett's positive contributions, which are many, including his central role in extending the rights of the oppressed and the disenfranchised in Britain. So, we were very disappointed about the cancellation, but as we were not managing and running the project ourselves, it was not for us to take the decision as to whether to proceed. Had it been our project, we would not have cancelled it. As Mr. Fennell said, Cobbett's achievements were considerable. We disagree completely with Mr. Fennell's quote that a celebration of Cobbett's life would now be completely inappropriate.
Gray's Festival gets set to return. It seemed that Gray's Festival would never return to Twyford, but the popular event is being revived for 2021 and beyond, under new management, according to official sources. At the beginning of last year, the Chronicle reported that the organisers would not be continuing the annual affair. But on Monday, organisers said, "It's been a while since we shared anything with you, and with a few rumours bubbling around the local festival scene, we wanted to provide a quick update on plans to relaunch Gray's Festival in 2021 and beyond. Now, under newish management, the team are exploring options for an event this summer. The current roadmap from lockdown to reopening suggests an event at the end of the summer is feasible, but far from certain. One thing we do know is that the Gray's Festival community is at the very core of our existence."
Marketing suite to stay despite residents' traffic fears. Councillors have approved keeping a temporary structure at a major housing development despite local people fears that it could mean permanent traffic access. Barclay Homes wanted permission to keep its marketing suite even though it has a new one on the site. The company is using the older ones as a base for staff visiting the site at the former police headquarters on Romsey Road. There were 14 objections to the proposal to use it until August 2022. Kate McIntosh of West End Terrace said access onto that road was no longer justified as the new marketing suite is off Romsey Road. Tim Montague agreed, saying the local concern was that access off the very narrow West End Terrace could become permanent. Planning Officer Catherine Watson said access from West End Terrace had been blocked off except for pedestrians and cyclists. She said contractors will not be using the gate. Their access is off Romsey Road. When I visited in November, the West End Terrace gate was padlocked. The development is due to be substantially complete by August 2022. The marketing suite will be removed and the area landscaped. Councillors on the planning committee voted to unanimously approve the scheme with 7 votes. Knight's Quarter has 1, 2 and 3 bedroom apartments, penthouses and 4 and 5 bedroom houses. And there's a picture of the site taken from Romsey Road. I mean, there are a lot of very high buildings in there. I know the Romsey Road police headquarters was tall, but there are a lot of buildings crammed on the site now. It looks very densely populated.
2 in 5 have had vaccine. More than 2 in 5 people in Winchester have received their first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, figures reveal. NHS data shows 41,322 people had received a vaccine by February the 28th, equating to 41% of those aged 16 and over, according to the latest population estimates from the Office for National Statistics. Of those vaccinated, 25,518 were aged 65 or over, 96% of the age group. It means 15,800 people aged between 16 and 64 have received a first dose of the vaccine. The data also reveals variation in coverage between different areas across Winchester. The proportion of residents prioritised for vaccinations, such as those over 65, is one factor that could affect vaccine coverage. Areas with the highest coverage are Number 1, Alresford, with 47.9% of people aged 16 and over. Number 2, Denmead and Southwick, 46%. 3, Bishops Waltham and Waltham Chase, 45%. Areas with the lowest coverage: 1, Winchester Stanmore, 28.7%. 2, Winchester East, 33%, and 3, Winchester Central and South, 34.3%. Across England, 17.2 million people have received their first dose of vaccine by February the 28th, covering 38% of the population aged 16 and over. That includes 9.7 million people over 65 and over, 94% of the age group. A small number of people aren't included due to their age being unknown. This week, nearly 2 million people aged 60 to 63 were sent letters inviting them to book a coronavirus jab.
Drinks in Winchester. A fine for a woman from London. COVID fines have been issued to a London woman who travelled to the Winchester area for drinks with friends and a parent who let their children visit friends. Winchester police have said that following patrols on Sunday last week, 4 fines were handed out to those who were found to be breaking COVID regulations. Sergeant Marsh Clasby and PC Fry issued a fine to a woman who had travelled from London to the district to visit a friend for drinks. They also dished out a fine to the parent of 2 children after it came to light they were allowed out all afternoon to meet friends and receive a ride home from the parent of one of their friends. The officers were later called to reports of a party in Alsford, but on arrival there was no party. But they found 3 different households mixing. Sergeant Marsh Glasby said the occupants appeared to feel the rules did not apply to them. The homeowner and another male have now been issued with a fine. 4 youths were also found together at a recreational ground in Otterbourne, and one was found in possession of cannabis. She was taken home to her parents and issued a community resolution. Sergeant Marsh Glasby continued, "We know the weather has got better and the sun is out, but please remember we're still in lockdown and you can only leave your home for very limited reasons." More than 1,200 COVID fines have been issued by Hampshire Police since the pandemic began, new figures show. Statistics from the National Police Chiefs Council show the constabulary issued 1,247 fixed penalty notices for breaches of the coronavirus regulations between March the 27th last year and February the 14th this year. No fines have been handed out for holding a gathering of more than 30 people, but 33 fines were issued to businesses failing to adhere to regulations. The force dished out 26 fines for flouting face covering rules, and 3 jet setters were fined for failing to self-isolate after returning from abroad.
Charity forges on with expansion scheme. A Winchester charity is forging ahead with its city centre expansion plans. Contractors began preparatory work at St John's Colebrook Street site on March the 1st. This development will see 15 new almshouses connected directly to the existing community to enable more elderly people to live independently for longer. Residents will benefit from a state-of-the-art block of apartments. The homes will be adaptable to the individual needs of the resident. St John's Chair of Trustees, Roger Bright, said, "We are at an exciting stage of the charity's development. We have much work to do and are considering plans to expand further the accommodation and community support we offer. We are delighted to be working with talented architects and contractors to expand housing opportunities for older people in the city." The new almshouses will be integrated with the existing South Side almshouses and will sit in a landscaped garden. They will bring the added benefit of the reformation of a character building, namely 108 Colebrook Street, which will be repurposed into 2 flats and a maisonette suitable for older people. Within this listed building, there will also be a beauty salon, assisted bathroom and a treatment room. Clive Cook, chief executive, said, "The Colebrook Street site will allow the St John's Almshouse community to endure and flourish in the city within a modern setting, with occupiers of the new units having the benefit of integration into our existing community."
Police deny dog theft rumours. Hampshire police are reassuring dog owners that thefts of dogs have not increased, despite rumours and speculation on social media. During the recent months, a number of social media posts have appeared online regarding dog thefts and suspicious individuals lurking at popular dog walking spots. Now, Hampshire police are trying to put owners' minds at ease. Inspector Corinne Bishop from Hampshire Constabulary's Rural Policing Team said that she understands the concern but wants to reassure owners that there has not been an increase in thefts. In 2020, there were 26 reports of either theft or attempted theft, and 22 dogs are recorded as being recovered or having returned. So far this year, there have been 10 theft-related incidents. This is 5 thefts and 5 attempted thefts. 6 dogs have been recovered or returned. Inspector Bishop said, "We want people not to be worried, and we want people to make sure posts to be factually correct." She said she was not here to police social media, but explained they were not seeing the level of increase. She explained some posts being shared to local groups are often from different parts of the country. She said, "We're not saying it's not happening. If we see any reports of crime, we'll take it seriously. We need people to be telling us about it, and you need to call it." Inspector Bishop has offered some advice to help keep dogs safe. She said owners need to make sure their dogs are microchipped and that when walking you should keep your dog in sight. And if you do see any suspicious activity, you should report it to 101. And this can also be done anonymously online via Hampshire Constabulary's website. In an emergency, call 999.
Civic chiefs approve £400 million capital plan. Civic chiefs have given final approval to a £400 million capital programme for Winchester over the next 10 years to 2031, and also a rent rise for their 5,000 tenants. The biggest part is for housing of £340 million, including £239 million on building 1,000 affordable homes in the next 10 years and £70 million on major repairs and maintenance. Among the capital schemes are the new sports and leisure centre due to open this spring, tackling the climate emergency and creating a greener district, £17 million, and creating a vibrant local economy, £36.7 million. At full council, the Conservative opposition repeated their attacks on the programme, citing a lack of ambition. Councillor Stephen Godfrey asked what had happened to Station Approach and the Central Winchester Regeneration, better known as Silver Hill. "The council should be pressing on with schemes to bring employment to Winchester. Stop this dither and delay, which is the hallmark of this administration." Tory leader Caroline Horrell said the supplementary planning document for Silver Hill had involved thousands of people but had not been actioned. "The council needs to stop its reviewing and start delivering." The Lib Dems say that the massive uncertainty of the COVID crisis has slowed progress on major projects such as Station Approach and Silver Hill. Senior Lib Dem Kelsey Learney countered, "The belief there is a magic money tree still seems to be in the Conservative group, despite their failure to find it when they were in office." Some £500,000 will be spent on demolishing the Friarsgate Medical Centre and clearing the area for an interim open space before future redevelopment in the Silver Hill scheme. Demolition will save on business rates and maintaining the empty building, estimated at £64,000 a year. Some £10 million is being set aside for land purchase for future council house building.
New house approved. Planners have approved a back garden development on the edge of Swanmore. Richard Payne applied for a new detached house in a garden at Collingwood on Lower Chase Road. There were 17 objections who said it's out of character and poor design. Objector Brendan Dineen, a neighbour, said the development had implications for quality of life in our back garden. We don't need it and we don't want it. Philip Dudley, agent for Mr. Payne, said, "The application is within the settlement boundary, so there is a presumption in favour of development. The character of the area has changed. The site next door has been built by the applicant." But the committee heard that the building by Mr. Payne of five houses next door had already altered the character of the area. Mr. Dudley said the scheme now reflects the locality, so is not against the Swanmore Village design statement. Councillor Brian Laming said he was concerned about the damage to the village design statement. He said, "It's an important document that reflects what the local people feel they need and want." The committee voted unanimously to approve the scheme.
Open House Delhi adapts to the new world of COVID-19. A lucky winner has been drawn from the many entries in the Hampshire Chronicle Love Local Business Competition. She is Bex Smith of Open House Delhi. Bex launched the business from a stall in Winchester Market in 2018 and then took on premises in Middlebrook Street in January 2019. All through the pandemic, they had been operating takeaway and delivery at different points when rules have allowed. Bex said, "It has gone bonkers. We have been rushed off our feet and we have amazing support from the local community." Open House Delhi celebrates the best of freshly prepared, locally sourced food, including salads, soups, vegan treats and much more. Bex added, "When the lockdown first hit, we pivoted our business and set up a delivery service. We deliver veg boxes, essentials, groceries and now a fill your fridge offer to buy six of our salads, fitters, hotspots, soups or dips for £25. We have recently now opened back up for takeaway too. She is absolutely delighted to be the Love Local winner. The prize includes 4 months of free advertising and ongoing support for the business."
Another success story, Hannah's live semi-final approaches. Keep your eyes on the TV screen. Hannah Williams, Winchester's spectacular singer on The Voice UK, will perform in the semi-finals this Saturday, March the 13th. The 38-year-old progressed from the battle rounds after beating Sammy and Nathan. Both of the performers were on Sir Tom Jones' team, but the Welsh legend could only take one of them to the next stage. It's unknown what song she will sing on the next round of the Hit ITV show. Following the performance, the vote will then be opened and viewers invited to take their pick. The four artists with the highest number of public votes will be announced and will represent their team in the final. Earlier this week, the University of Winchester, where Hannah studied and now works as a vocal consultant and teacher, released a video celebrating her success. The university's music centre has released a video featuring Hannah singing soul anthem Stay With Me Baby with current and former students on backing vocals and instruments. The video aims to raise funds for Trinity Winchester, supporting their work with vulnerable people and those affected by homelessness. Neil Valentine, creative director at the University Music Centre, said, "We're thrilled that Hannah's doing so well on The Voice UK. We're currently working on a second video with Hannah and are excited to confirm that her battle partner, Sammy Nathan, is going to be part of that as we perform our own version of their battle song, Cry Me a River. To date, we've raised nearly £700 for Trinity Winchester, and as Hannah's profile rises, we hope this will continue to build as the videos reach more people. We're all delighted with how current students and alumni got involved in this and continue to be inspired by Hannah's journey." Hannah is a soul singer who fronts Bristol-based soul band Hannah Williams and The Affirmations. And there is a picture of Hannah singing into a microphone with headphones on while she's preparing for the charity video.
Hyde Street Campaign. More than 400 people have joined the campaign to reopen Hyde Street in Winchester as a contrary petition is close to reaching its target. An online petition against closure has attracted around 400 signatures in the last 2 weeks, taking the number to 1,555. Its organisers claim almost all the supporters are local to Winchester. The number has doubled in around 3 weeks, supporting the petition on the 38degrees.org.uk website. An earlier petition on the website by Extinction Rebellion, backing measures to limit vehicle use in the city centre, now has 793 names, towards a target of 800. It does not explicitly call for Hyde Street to be closed, but supports narrowing north walls to one lane for traffic, which would entail closing Hyde Street. Last year, the county and city councils introduced a temporary closure to through traffic to allow for the narrowing of the two-lane north walls for better social distancing and to encourage walking and cycling. But opponents say the price being paid is too high, with clear evidence that the closure is increasing traffic on nearby roads, such as Worthy Lane, Andover Road and City Road, causing more congestion and pollution. They are considering legal action over the introduction of the measure last year, made with no public consultation. The closure has the support of most of the residents of Hyde Street, who have seen traffic levels fall sharply. The issue is the most controversial road closure in the city since the shutting of College Street in the early 1990s. Petition organiser Steve Harborne originally aimed at 1,000 signatures, but has now increased the target to 2,000. The County Council is consulting over an 18-month closure. It runs until March the 21st. The council is also asking opinions on other proposals: the narrowing of north walls to a single lane, the widening of a footway on that street, and a two-way cycle lane. A wider pavement on Jury Street on the Discovery Centre side, a contraflow cycling lane on Upper High Street, and a puffin crossing on Rumsey Road at the junction with Clifton Terrace. In a letter in the Chronicle, Mr. Harborne said the vast majority of names were from local people. Mr. Harborne of Worthy Lane said, "Unsurprisingly, as this is an important local issue, more than 99.9% of this support has come from people living in Winchester itself or the surrounding villages. Only half a dozen or so are from those outside the immediate locality."
Urging talk on organ donation. The trust which runs Winchester Hospital, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, is backing a new NHS campaign to urge families to talk about organ donation. This comes after research that shows less than half of adults in England have had the conversation. The Leave Them Certain campaign aims to highlight the impact not knowing has on the families who are left behind and encourage people to talk about their decision. It follows the law change last year in England, which means that all adults are seen as willing to donate their organs unless they opt out or are in one of the excluded groups. However, many don't realise that families will still be approached before any donation goes ahead. Even though 80% of people are willing to donate their organs, only 39% say they have shared their decision. And while a huge 9 in 10 families support organ donation if they knew what their loved ones wanted, this figure falls to around half when a decision is not known. As part of the campaign, a new TV advert launched featuring the Kakkad family. Shivam's father, Bharat, died from a cardiac arrest when he was 63 in May 2019. But the family had never spoken about organ donation.
A web of lies and deceit. A former Hampshire police officer has been dismissed without notice. PC Olivia Lucas, who created a web of lies and deceit, has been found to have committed gross misconduct at a public hearing. She resigned from the force shortly before her hearing on Monday and failed to attend the proceedings. Lucas was alleged to have breached the standards of professional behaviour in relation to honesty and integrity and discreditable conduct. A panel found all allegations proven and ruled that Lucas would have been dismissed without notice had she still been serving. She has now been placed on the police barred list. The allegations put before the panel were that before October 2018 and July 2019, she was dishonest and behaved in a manner likely to bring discredit on the police service, in that she was dishonest to colleagues and supervisors about having a medical condition and receiving treatment at a specialist hospital. She sent a member of the public, a retired police officer, a copy of a fabricated county court judgment adversely implicating another serving officer whom she knew. She sent the same member of the public a surveillance log that was purportedly from Imperial Security, showing another serving officer whom she knew being surveilled whilst off duty when that log was a fabrication. She had composed false messages purporting to come from an officer within the Professional Standards Department and provided the same member of the public with a number of screenshots of those messages adversely and falsely implicating innocent serving officers. She dishonestly told the member of public that she had received a number of offensive or threatening messages from various serving officers when in fact she had composed them herself, either in manuscript or using an application on her mobile phone. Panel Chair Jane Jones said the long-term deception of her colleagues and the force and the huge level investment into her fantasy was done for her own purposes and with no regard for those drawn into her web of lies. The level of meanness and malice was disturbing, behaving with a total lack of empathy, meddling and toying with personal relationships, as well as taking advantage of the decency and compassion of her colleagues.
Peregrine's back at Nest. For the fifth year running, the resident pair of peregrine falcons have returned to the nesting site at Winchester Cathedral. The birds were sighted on the peregrine cam over the past few weeks. Of the five eggs laid in 2020, all five hatched and fledged, which is an incredibly rare occurrence. In 2019, all four eggs hatched and fledged, with one of the young male birds having recently taken up residence at St Andrew's Church in Farnham. Keith Betton from the Hampshire Ornithological Society has been monitoring the behaviour of the birds this year, with Winnie and Chester displaying positive signs they're preparing for another season, including frequent visits to the nest and making a dent in the soft shingle of the nesting tray. By mid-March, it's expected that Winnie will be laying eggs. "We're hopeful that 2021 will be another successful year for the peregrines," said Keith Betton, Hampshire Ornithological Society. "Witnessing the chicks hatching is a rare sight that people don't often get to experience, and we're very excited to be able to share this. The peregrine cam provides everyone with the great privilege to view their nesting tray and the chance to follow their daily progress from hatchlings to fledglings." Over the last 3 years, Winnie and Chester have reared 12 chicks, having relocated to Winchester Cathedral in 2017.
Tom Romita says, "I'm not going anywhere soon." Don't worry, Winchester, Tom's Deli isn't going anywhere soon. That's the message from Tom Romita, whose cafe restaurant is currently on the market. Tom, 68, is looking to retire, and so the business on St George's Street is up for sale with an asking price of around £100,000. He opened the business as a newsagent in the late 1980s before gradually converting it into a delicatessen using family links with the Puglia region in southern Italy. In a statement he said, "Tom's Deli is a much-loved Italian eatery in the heart and soul of Winchester. After 30 years, owner Tom Romita is now looking to hand the reins over while he looks to retire. Tom and his wife, Hiromi, hope to travel to both of their hometowns, Biselia in Puglia, and to Japan, where Hiromi hails from. Tom's son, Yuichi, is also studying in Japan to become a master potter, so there are many reasons why Tom wants to see more of the world. But first, Tom is keen to work with the new owner to ensure a smooth transition and plans to be around for some time.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thank you to you, John.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.